And welcome back to the show. It's making national news. The city of Grand Rapids recovering from a mass murder yesterday, which was followed by a massive manhunt and police chase. To get the latest on this tragic story, I'm joined by Kate Nagengast, online news producer for MLive.com and the Grand Rapids Press. Kate has been following the story by the minute since it began. Welcome to the show, Kate.
Thank you very much.
Now, let's first get an understanding of what happened in Grand Rapids yesterday. When did police first become aware that a killing spree was underway?
We didn't initially know that it would be a killing spree, but around 2:40 p.m. yesterday afternoon, we heard dispatchers on the traffic scanners indicate that a Grand Rapids man had called his mother and told his mother that he killed his wife. The mother then phoned police, and police rushed to the scene of that man's house. That man, we now know, is mass murder suspect Roderick Dantzler, who has been, who then for the next 11 hours or so terrorized the Grand Rapids area, first with seven killings at two different locations, then with a manhunt, a police chase, and eventually a hostage situation involving three people, all in northeast Grand Rapids.
Do we know what triggered the spree?
We do not. We know that it's a situation of extreme domestic violence. Two of the victims were ex-girlfriends of Dantzler, and one of the victims was his child. The others were all family members of the victims, of those two women he had been in relationships with. So we don't know of an incident or something that would have triggered it right away yesterday, but we know that these people were all connected to him through, at one point, romantic relationships.
Now, Dantzler had several run-ins with the law. In 2000, he was charged with felony assault and felony to assault with intent to murder, to which he pleaded guilty. Do we have any details on that incident and on his general demeanor yesterday?
We know that his demeanor was extremely volatile yesterday. Friends have described him as bipolar, and the police say that during the hostage situation, he was vacillating between extremely agitated and calm. What you described is what we know of his felony records. He had previous breaking and entering and attempted murder, for which he served various amounts of time. No prison sentence very long, frankly. And then we also know, and we learned today, that there were multiple personal protection orders taken out against him, including one by his mother when he was just 18, claiming that he couldn't control his violent reactions.
Now, the police at one point had multiple units chasing him down I-96 yesterday evening. How was he able to evade them?
He wasn't driving very fast. It wasn't that he completely evaded him. They were able to form a perimeter around him using about 14 cars to protect other drivers. But he was shooting out the back window of the SUV he was in, and they were unable to get in front of him at that point. However, by then, they had already hit him with stop strips. He was basically driving on rims between 30 and 40 miles per hour and unable to control his vehicle very well. It was, I think, more a matter of how quickly they got to his vehicle once he did crash into the median. He managed to escape the vehicle before they approached it. But they had a good handle on the vehicle when it was moving between helicopters and those police cruisers.
I see. Now, they weren't attempting to take any, they weren't firing back at him at that point.
Not at that point. He was in very public, very congested areas for much of that chase, straight through the heart of downtown Grand Rapids and on busy highways, you know, toward the end of the workday. So I don't know as far as shots fired then, but it seems he was doing most of the firing during that police chase. And then once he confined himself, once he crashed the car, he ran from the car, he broke into an apartment and took three hostages, that's when police were able to take control of the situation by surrounding him where he was, communicating with the hostages inside, communicating with him. He was calling them from his cell phone, and really get in position to take control of the situation in a safe way, more safe than you'd be on a major public highway.
Now, Dantzler apparently broke into a random apartment and took hostages after this chase. What do we know about what happened inside the apartment and who was in there?
We know that the apartment is owned by a couple who was taken hostage, a 70-year-old man and his 53-year-old significant other. The significant other, was the first person freed from the house. Dantzler demanded Gatorade and cigarettes and sent this woman out, a 53-year-old woman, out to claim those items for him. When she brought them back, she was freed. At that point, police were reporting that there was just one hostage in the house. It turns out, the 70-year-old man, a second hostage was hiding, a woman who'd come to visit the couple who owned the house. She was hiding but emerged because Dantzler became frustrated with the 70-year-old man. He's hard of hearing, and he was having trouble communicating with him, and it was making him more and more agitated. So she became fearful enough for her friend that she emerged from hiding and communicated with Dantzler on their behalf.
I'm talking to Kate Nagengast, an online news producer at MLive.com and the Grand Rapids Press. Now, Kate, you've been following this case closely since it began, and the coverage on MLive.com included a criminal justice professor who says Roderick Dantzler appeared to fit a subcategory of mass murderers known as a family annihilator. Who were the victims then in this killing spree?
The victims are his two prior girlfriends. We begin with his a girlfriend named Kimberly. Can you give me a minute and then
sure,
I'll run through
sure.
these? Okay,
uh-huh.
Let me get up.
Yeah,
sorry.
Sure. Yep. No. That's the beauty of editing.
Okay,
so.
I thought perfect. Okay, now I can go. The victims were found at two locations. At the first location was a longtime girlfriend of. Okay, we're going to go one more time.
Sure, absolutely, no problem.
Here we go. Here's what we know about the victims. The victims were found at two locations. Three people found on Plainfield Avenue in Northeast Grand Rapids included a one-time girlfriend of Roderick Dantzler named Kimberly Emkins. She was killed along with her sister, Amanda Emkins, and her sister's daughter, Marissa Emkins, 10 years old. Those sisters, the ex-girlfriend was 23 years old, Kimberly, and Amanda was 27. They were found at the first house. At the second house, four more victims were found, also including an ex. Jennifer Hereen, 29, was a longtime girlfriend of Dantzler who had a child with him. Jennifer was killed as well as that child, a 12-year-old daughter named Kimri. Also killed are Jennifer's parents at that home, also in Northeast Grand Rapids, Thomas Hereen and his wife, Rebecca. They're business owners in the Grand Rapids area of a small family produce market on the southwest side.
And it appears that the Dantzler just walked into these homes and shot them with a handgun then?
That is what it appears.
How is the community of Grand Rapids reacting at this point? I'm sure there's a sense of shock. What other types of reactions are you seeing there?
Absolutely shocked. We're seeing people start to mobilize to mourn and to cope and also to try to take care of these victims. There'll be a vigil tonight right on the edge of downtown at Anabawan Park near the Grand Rapids Ford Museum. That will be the largest gathering at 8:30 tonight. There's also a church and a school planning arrangements, and we're hearing throughout the day from small groups getting together just to talk and kind of unite with the community, saying that bad things happened, but this is our home. And this is a good place. There's also a bank fund being started to support the victims' families. And we're collecting here at the Grand Rapids Press actually sentiments and a reflection on the community and what this means through our website, MLive.com.
And in terms of those that were injured in the incident and fired upon while he was driving around the city, what's their status?
Oh, the people who were wounded, we do not have a full count of the wounded. We know there was a man wounded right in the heart of downtown Grand Rapids during the chase. He is in fair condition, I believe. He was shot in the face but saved by a plate in his nose, he says, that was placed there for a normal surgical procedure years ago. So the bullet hit steel instead of his full face bones. We also know of a sibling to one of the victims. She was wounded but not killed. So she is to a sister of one of the dead. So she is still recovering. We believe there are others. There was a shootout early in the day on the southwest side of town that is now being connected with this. So we don't have a full count of the injured but not dead yet.
Kate Nagengast, online news producer for MLive.com and the Grand Rapids Press, giving us the latest on the mass murder in Grand Rapids. Thank you for joining me, Kate.
Thank you very much.
We'll be right back with more Capital City Recap. I'm Michael Cohen. This is 1320 WILS.